Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Kevin Anderson and very excited to have NBC Sports National NBA Insider Tom Habistro with us. You can follow Tom's work on the My Teams app, specifically the Bulls page, and on Twitter at Tom Habistro. Tom, you've got your debut piece for us. Is the headline is very catchy. Stephen Curry is the new Michael Jordan. Tell me how that piece came together and how you saw the progression of what Jordan was to the league in the late 80s and 90s to what Curry is today.
Well, first, Kevin, thank you for having me on. I didn't know if any Bulls fans would want me ever to speak again after that story. So I was happy to see that you reached out because I didn't know what the reception would be for Bulls fans to make this kind of heresy claim that someone else could be better or as good or as transformative or as transcendent, as influential as Michael Jordan himself. But this is one of these stories that I've been thinking about for a long time, because if you go to youth leagues or if you see your cousin or your nephew going to play basketball, a lot of those kids these days look like me. When I was growing up watching Michael Jordan and trying to wear his shoes, sticking my tongue out and trying to dunk, and I didn't do it. I failed miserably trying to dunk. But a lot of these kids are trying to be Steph Curry. They're wearing his shoes, they're wearing his jersey, and I feel like it's the same thing that I grew up doing with Michael Jordan, is trying to emulate him. I could not dunk, but he did so many things on the court that I wanted to do. And I think Steph Curry, just as a basketball player, is hugely inspirational for not just kids, but NBA players now. You look at Kemba Walker, Dame Lillard, Trae Young, the way they play their games, where they have these pull-up threes from 25 feet, sometimes 30 feet away from the basket, it's all about Steph. All these guys have figured out that, like, hey, if I'm really short compared to, like, the giants of the NBA, one way I can neutralize that advantage or neutralize that disadvantage is to take shots very far away from the basket. And there's this huge trend in the NBA right now of basically baby Stephs, of players who are trying to emulate that type of game. So, you know, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I think Steph Curry, what he does with the deep three, is maybe the most transformative addition to the NBA game since Michael Jordan doing the dunk, and how influential that was for the rest of the NBA.
You know, you and I are from the same era. We watched Larry, Magic, and Michael. And every single kid in the late 80s and 90s who picked up a basketball tried to emulate, whether you could dunk or not, you tried to emulate two things. You tried to emulate Jordan's move against the Lakers, the up and over, and the call with that. And you tried to mimic his turnaround jump shot as he developed that. What I found very interesting in your piece is the fact that the NBA youth guidelines have changed, that they have recommended that you don't have a three-point shot implemented in 11 and under youth leagues. And do you think that is a direct result of kids seeing Steph play and be like, you know what, I want to practice a 25-footer, even though I probably don't have the arm strength and the body strength to do that?
Yeah, I do. And I think Steph Curry, I didn't get into it very much in the story, but he has said as much, that he believes that he is a direct result of that guideline. Because I think Mark Jackson, his former coach, was on an ESPN broadcast, and he said it himself that he kind of feels like Steph Curry is ruining basketball for kids. And at the time, it was kind of like, hey, this seems like a grumpy curmudgeon, get off my lawn statement. But I think Steph Curry even said recently, when that rule was announced by USA Basketball and the NBA, he said, look, I didn't shoot the three-pointer until I was 11 years old. That was about the same time that I was, you know, my dad let me shoot the three-pointer just because I wasn't ready. And so for kids, I remember the turnaround junction, like you said, you know, with Michael Jordan just in the backyard, 5, 4, 3, and doing a turnaround fadeaway. That was very much what I tried to do on a court. And the way I wore my shorts and the way of, you know, what shoes I wanted to buy, like that was such a big thing that previous generations just didn't have, I don't think, because just Michael Jordan was so marketable in ways that I think Steph Curry is the next one. I mean, I know LeBron James is as good as Steph Curry and as good as Michael Jordan just in general in that same tier, but I don't think kids are growing up being like, hey, when LeBron James does that crazy, you know, dunk or the chase down block, I don't feel like a lot of kids watch that and say, I could do that. Whereas you watch Steph Curry and what Trae Young is doing, and what he told me, Trae Young was like, he really opened up the door for me. He made it okay. Steph Curry made it okay for guys who look like me, young, smaller guards, to be able to make an impact from very far away from the basket. And he said, Steph Curry changed the whole league, period. And I think, you know, that's so instructive for me, is like understanding this happened so quickly. You know, Steph Curry played against Blake Griffin in Davidson, Oklahoma. If you remember that game, that was 10 years ago. Trae Young was 10 years old, and he went to that game because he was from Oklahoma and from Norman, Oklahoma, where the game was at OU. So he got to see that game, and it kind of opened up this new world for him where he could be that Steph Curry. And, man, the three-point shot hasn't really fallen for him so far this season, but his game is very much in the mold of Steph Curry. And I think a lot of NBA players, like Kemba Walker, they're averaging 10 three-pointers a game, 10 three-point attempts a game. And before Steph Curry came in, Kemba Walker didn't really have that in his game at all. He wasn't a good three-point shooter, but then he worked on it because I think, at least partially, he saw what Steph Curry used as a weapon. And now you see Dame Lillard and Trae Young, all these guys who are, you know, making a huge impact by shooting very, very far away.
You know, it's one thing for kids to emulate Steph Curry, but the entire league in the last 5+ years has changed. And is there a danger, though, because certainly Steph is a generational player. He's widely regarded as the greatest shooter of all time. And is it dangerous for teams to go, okay, we're just going to find our own version of Steph Curry to try and build an offense around this person? Or do you think that is just a bigger symptom of where the league is right now in regards to the way offenses are run in the system that Houston is running and certainly what Golden State has done with Steve Kerr? The trend in the league is to, you'd rather have a corner three than a post-up by a big man in a 7-foot, you know, hook shot. You know, in terms of where we are now, how far do you consider this going, and do you think it's dangerous that every team looks like they want to find their own Steph Curry? Because, quite frankly, that's impossible for you to get more than one Steph Curry. I mean, Trae Young, certainly Steph Curry light, but you're not going to have 30 teams in the league have their own Steph Curry.
Well, let me ask you this, Kevin. Was there ever a Michael Jordan after a Michael Jordan?
Yeah. I mean, what, you Kobe? You know, certainly Kobe was the next version of Michael, certainly was a clone of Michael in a lot of sense.
Yeah, except, like, you know, you're never going to be as good as Michael, but I think that, you know, trying to do what Michael did, you know, Kobe Bryant was as good of a facsimile of Michael Jordan as you'll find. But, you know, I actually, when I talked to Trae Young at Shootaround, I also talked to Vince Carter. Vince Carter has been in the league as long as Trae Young's been on this earth. And when he started coming into the NBA, you remember, he was the next Jordan.
Yeah.
He was this baby Jordan where he was from the two position for the UNC Tar Heels. He could dunk with the best of anybody. And he lit up living rooms because of his dunking ability. And what he proved was, like, he's not just a dunker, just like Michael Jordan was, you know, it was treated like a barb. You know, the idea that he was a dunker. And I use this quote. I dug it up in the Hartford Courant in 1987 of Larry Bird talking about Michael Jordan in regards to the MVP race that year. Michael was averaging 37 points a game as a 23-year-old that year in 87. And like in most years, people would expect to be, you know, Michael Jordan to be at the top of the MVP race when you're averaging that kind of points. And he was still efficient when he was doing that. And Larry Bird just kind of dismissed him and said, you know, Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, they're just dunkers. You know, Michael Jordan needs 30 shots to get to 30 points. It's different. Magic Johnson is the head and shoulders MVP of the league. And I found it kind of similar to the tenor that you hear about Steph Curry. Is, yes, he's the greatest shooter ever, but, you know, he's not an all-time great. He might be the best shooter, but, you know, I think those dismissive comments of Michael Jordan where he's just a dunker kind of ring true for Steph when Charles Barkley recently said that Golden State Warriors couldn't win a championship because jump shooting teams don't win championships, and then also saying that Steph Curry is just a great shooter, not a great overall player, just a great shooter. And I think it's the same thing where if you're Michael Jordan and you're able to, like, dunk on command, and obviously the mid-range shot was such a big part of his game too, but if you're able to, like, find this cheat code where you're able to, off the dribble, get to the rim and dunk it just about every time you want, that's a cheat code. That's an amazing weapon to have in the game of basketball. And the same thing goes for Steph Curry in the three-point shot is, like, I don't think you can belittle and separate the two. Like, yes, he's a great shooter, but that makes him a great basketball player because you can't do anything about that. You can't defend that in the same way that, you know, teams really struggle to defend Michael Jordan. And I think to go back to your original question, this you're not going to find another Steph Curry. You're not. But I do think that there is a market inefficiency, and this is a money ball term, a market inefficiency of, hey, if you have the ability to shoot at a high level from 25, 30 feet away when you're in space. You know, this is different than the paint. You brought up post-ups. The thing about post-ups is you can get double-teamed and people swipe it at you in the paint, and it's easier to defend simply because, you know, there are a lot of people in the paint. But if you can shoot at the same percentage in terms of the same payoff, like if you're a really good three-point shooter and you don't have the ability to be double-teamed way out by the 25 feet away from the basket, that's a really big weapon. And I think that's what teams are figuring out is it's so much easier to get a shot off uncontested. It makes things so much easier, and it's just a easier shot to get off uncontested, open shots if you're really far away from the basket. So here's a stat for you on that note. Steph Curry was entering the game 16 of 25 on deep threes. 16 of 25. That's a shooting percentage of 64% on shots beyond 27 feet.
Yeah, that's
away
crazy.
From the basket. So when you add the value of the three-point shot, that's the equivalent of 1.9 points every time you shoot it. You just average 1.9 points. An average dunk attempt, Kevin, is 1.8. So the Steph Curry three-pointer from way deep this season is a smidge more efficient, more effective than a dunk attempt. So like that's why you're seeing all these teams kind of copy this, is because if you're really good at hitting uncontested three-pointers off the dribble, like, man, they should try to go to that. It's not going to happen where you're going to see guys take 20 three-pointers or 30 three-pointers. It's not going to get that extreme. But I do think that there is a little bit of, hey, let's just see how far we can push this. And if it doesn't work out for us, we'll pull back. But I think the NBA is trying to push the envelope and see how many of these deep threes is making it worth their while.
You know, regarding the Larry Bird quote, it's interesting because, you know, I read that in the piece, and certainly, you know, we know Larry's relationship with Magic, so he's going to compliment and up Magic as possible. But it's ironic to me that that quote was just a few years after the God disguised as Michael Jordan quote,
yeah,
when Michael dropped 63 on him. So it's interesting reading that. Moving on to something you just brought up. So where the league is headed right now. There are 9 teams averaging 115 points a game in the league right now. 0 teams did it last year. And there are 2 teams scoring 120 points per game. And the last time any team did that was 84 and 85. Why is scoring so far up right now? And is this just the natural progression of where Golden State and specifically Curry have taken the league and where we are?
I think a couple things are happening here, Kevin, which is, you know, the rules have changed a little bit. There's a point of emphasis to allow freedom of movement and more specifically grabbing guys as they go off of screens. It was a way to stay with players, is grab their jerseys, grab their, you know, their arm or whatever it is to chase them. And they're emphasizing that, and they're calling a lot more fouls. You know, this is one of those things that without statistics or without, you know, some sort of measurement, it's hard to catch with your own eyes. But luckily we do have statistics, you know, from the 30,000 feet looking down, and you can see that actually this season, the free throws are at 24 attempts per game. Last year is at 21. So that's a small percentage of that, but there's just a lot more fouls being called that are leading to more points. And I think just generally speaking, that's hard to capture with your eye, but there is an increase so far in the number of free throws that are happening as a result of those foul calls. And in general, like, teams are getting pushed into the penalty a lot more because of those calls being those fouls being called, and so you're going to see an uptick in scoring that way too. But the pace is just crazy. I mean, right now, teams are averaging 100.6 possessions every 48 minutes. Last year, that was at 97, and a few years ago, that was at 93. In 2012, it was at 91. So right now, like 5 years, 5 years ago, there were 10 fewer possessions a game. And so that adds up.
It's a lot of points.
You know, you're seeing a lot of turbo ball, a lot of teams getting to shots quicker, and I think it does have an effect from Steph Curry and the Warriors. Ironically, I don't think they're nearly the fastest team in the NBA this year, but now every team is trying to match that. Like, the Sacramento Kings are just playing crazy fast out there, and I think it's a way to leverage a young team like the Chicago Bulls trying to play fast to leverage those athletes and try to get up and down the floor to use some of those young legs. So I think it's an overall trend in the league that I think it's going to come back down to earth a little bit here, because every opening month is faster and more points than the rest of the year. But I think this is going to be you know, something to watch, is whether those foul calls are still being called and whether teams are going to continue playing this fast as the season progresses.
Your Bulls, your way, anywhere, anytime. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Stream games and get the best Bulls coverage in Chicago at your fingertips. Download the My Teams app today.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Here with NBC Sports National NBA insider Tom Habestro. You can find his work on the My Teams app, on the Bulls page specifically. Tom, we know where the league was in the 80s, and it feels like we are throwback to the 80s where the league is. You contrast that with where the league was in the 90s in terms of physical play and scoring. Are we just kind of going through repeating history with that? Like, where do you see the league in 5 years? Do you see it reverting back to what happened in the 90s? Like, is that just the natural counter to what we're seeing now?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot more athletes in the NBA, not plotting centers. I mean, if you open up a pack of cards from like the early 90s or late 80s, you're going to see a lot of guys who don't look like they could hang in today's NBA. You know, it's just going to be a lot of players who look like, you know, Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr., these guys who are super athletes, who can play multiple positions and can guard and pass and super skilled. Like, those are the guys you're going to see in the league, and I think that's a good thing. A lot of people, there's a lot of hand-wringing and criticism of, like, there's no defense anymore in the NBA. I disagree. I think it's just the game is so much more open and played in space now that it's harder to defend. It's just harder to cover that much ground when, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, with the rules and the illegal defense, you know, it was totally different back then. And just you could camp out in the paint and you didn't have to guard the three-point line for 1 through 5. You know, there weren't 5 shooters on the floor that you had to guard at all times. Now the geometry of the game has expanded so much that it's just harder to defend and cover that much ground and be able to defend at a high level. So I think the game is trending towards that. You're going to see a lot more athletes in general, a lot more shooters to leverage that kind of spacing. And you're going to see a lot of guys just be able to drive better because of that freedom of movement and because there's just more space. And people ask me, you know, I was on the Dan Le Batard show at ESPN today, and they asked me, what do you think Michael Jordan could have done in today's NBA? Would he be better? And I'm like, yeah, I think he would be, because how do you guard Michael Jordan?
Couldn't.
In space? You can't. Like, yeah. If he gets by you, there's no help defender like there was in years past. The Bad Boys, you know, Jordan rules. Like, there wouldn't be any Bill Laimbeer into the paint because you got a guy at the three-point line. It'd just be so hard to guard Michael in space.
So give me a number. What would Michael average right now if he was in his prime playing in today's game?
Oh, man, in today's pace, I mean, he'd be at least 35, 40 points a game. Because not only is he such a good scorer, but the pace of the game, it would cater to his skills. It would cater to the fact that, you know, if he gets by you, it's going to be a dunk every single time. And you know what? Like, we saw him average 37 points a game. We know he's capable of doing that. Now just add the fact that there's going to be shooters around him. When he did that, like, who are the best players on the Bulls that year? There was no Scottie Pippen. There was no Dennis Rodman. There was no Horace Grant on that team. I think there were just about 500 when he averaged 37. Just imagine if he had the kind of shooters that Steph Curry has. That's not to belittle what Steph Curry is doing, but it just goes to show, like, if you're trying to guard Michael Jordan in space, good luck.
You mentioned Zach LaVine, who's currently fourth in the league in scoring, a 27-4 game. Do you think he can keep that up? Do you think he will finish in the top five? And do you consider him the early front runner for most improved player?
Yeah, he's been awesome this year. And I remember doing the rounds up in Chicago earlier this season for like the first couple games of the season, saying, like, everyone, you need to pay attention to Zach LaVine. He is going to average 25 points per game. And after a while, it looked like I was undershooting it. I mean, he was averaging 30 every night for a while. And I think he is one of the candidates for most improved player of the year. He's been awesome. Can he be a top five scorer for the rest of the year? It's going to be tough considering, Markkanen hasn't come back. And I want to know what happens to his touches when Markkanen does come back and eats into those possessions a little bit. But I'm really impressed with his passing ability and his ability to involve other players. I mean, last year, you didn't quite see this kind of ball movement from Zach LaVine. It was just a little bit more me, trying to get back from his injury. And you're seeing him just have much better assist numbers. And, yes, his turnovers are up, but I think that's just because the ball is in his hands a lot more. So, you know, Zach LaVine, he had a really, really hot start, and I think ultimately he needs to continue to press defenses in the open court and get out in the open court because that's where he's at his best. Get to the free throw line. He's doing a much better job of that this year. So I think he can stay in the top five. He just has to keep pushing, keep getting out in transition, and he can get there. Right now, he has at least 20 points in all 12 games of this season, and I think he can keep going. Yeah.
So sometimes when you know, we cover the Bulls every day, we watch every single minute of every single game, and sometimes it's hard to see the forest through the trees, so to speak. What is the national perspective of where this team is? Because in the annual anonymous GM survey at the beginning of the year, the GM said that the Bulls actually had the third most promising young core in the league, behind certainly the Sixers and Celtics. Where do you see this team, and how far away are they from really being a playoff team? And what do you think the national perspective is on where the Bulls are in the midst of their rebuild?
You know, they're an exciting group. Really, I mean, there are a lot of teams that aren't as good as the Bulls are in the same, you know, general conversation of where the Bulls are in the standings, that don't have as much bright young talent as they do. I mean, when you look at Wendell Carter Jr., of all the teenagers that have played in the NBA, guess how many have averaged 10 points and 7 rebounds in the NBA as their rookie year? Like, you know, a teenager. A
19 years old and younger?
19 years old and younger, averaging 10 and 7. I mean, the list is very short. It's Anthony Davis. He's actually pretty good. Dwight Howard, an amazing player, amazing career. Maybe not so much now, but he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Chris Bosh, going to be in the Hall of Fame. And Cliff Robinson are the only four guys who have ever averaged 10 and 7 as a teenager, and that's what Wendell Carter Jr. is doing right now. And I think when you talk to people around the league, that's the most exciting player that they have on their roster, because he's able to defend, he's able to pass, and he's able to do this all as a teenager. Right now, he's averaging 2 blocks a game. You know how many teenagers ever averaged 2 blocks a game? Zero. Zero. So this guy has a complete package. He's thrust into the starting role as a teenager, and I think when you talk about young talent in the league, obviously you got to talk about Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and what they're doing in Philadelphia, but you also have to talk about what Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr. with Lauri Markkanen. Those three right there are super interesting. It's going to be a couple years before they get back into the playoff picture. I don't think it's this year or next season because of the injury to Markkanen, and I want to see what those three guys do together before I say that they're going to chase the playoffs. But they can be in the conversation this year. I wouldn't pencil them in just quite yet, but man, it's a really, really interesting core, and I think it starts with Wendell Carter Jr.
So future Hall of Famer Wendell Carter, I love it.
Yeah.
So last one for you. The Bulls are going to have somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million in cap space next summer if they don't pick up the option on Jabari Parker, which I don't think many people expect them to do that. Are they truly one superstar player? I'm talking a Kawhi Leonard-type player. Are they one superstar away from being a Eastern Conference championship contender in and out?
You know, I think it might be too early to say. I think, you know, Anthony Davis in New Orleans kind of taught me this. You don't want to try to shoot for playoffs way too early. And I think the core around him, they try to get a bunch of guys who are veterans who are going to win right now a few years back. And I don't think that's the move. I think they probably should let this marinate and let this grow before. I mean, obviously they'd like to have a superstar, but I don't think they're a superstar away. I think they're a couple summers away from actually being in that conversation of one superstar away. So, you know, Chicago hasn't had the greatest track record in recruiting a number one, you know, talent, you know, a franchise-changing talent. And I think it's gonna be a little while before an NBA star like Kawhi Leonard looks at this franchise and says, you know, that young collection is really, really good, and I want to join it right now. I think it's just a little too early on that spectrum. But I think in a couple years, when they start bubbling up, like the Philadelphia 76ers, I think they're going to be able to attract a superstar talent. Maybe not quite yet, but I think from a national perspective, they're on their way. It's just going to take probably another year or so.
Do you think that's the number one determining factor for most free agents? Because the money's the same. Is a team that they can go into and basically become a championship team immediately that they step into because of the core around them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I think that's the question. Also, just the quality of life. You know, I think Miami is a big attraction for superstars because of Miami, because Miami's really fun. And L.A., of course, LeBron went there, not because of the talent, but because of the quality of life for him, I think was a huge driver of that move. But you saw for several years after Kobe Bryant retired, there weren't a lot of stars coming to L.A., you know? And so I think that the quality of life and the glamour market, like, you should in Chicago be able to attract free agents because the city is so awesome. But it's been a while since a star has done that. And even when Carlos Boozer went there, it was very much it wasn't Dwayne Wade, it wasn't Chris Bosh, it wasn't LeBron James, it wasn't, those kind of players. But Carlos Boozer went. And, you know, ever since then, it's been a big question mark is whether they can, you know, retain that or recruit that kind of star talent. So, you know, that's going to be a big variable for, I think, Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler is, do they have the ability to win a championship? But I also think the quality of life in the organization are going to be factors as well.
The huge irony is that the Bulls' number one need is a three that can defend the perimeter at an elite level, and that's of course what Jimmy is, and certainly what Kawhi is too. That would be a story. You'd be here writing about a lot of stories if Jimmy came back to the Bulls this summer. That would be something.
No doubt. It's with JB, I would not be surprised anything at this point. I would not be surprised by anything that he does because it's just been that crazy what's been going on in Minnesota. So I've learned not to make any sort of assumptions of what he should do or what he will do. I mean, put it this way. How many times have you seen Tom Thibodeau rest a guy for health reasons, you know, to preventative injury?
Yeah.
They're doing that with Jimmy Butler. I never would have thought in my lifetime I would see Jimmy Butler rest for for preventative reasons. But this is where we are with the whole saga in Minnesota, is that Jimmy Butler is sitting out games because he's either fatigued or he's trying to make a statement or what have you. But I never thought I would ever see Tom Thibodeau resting Jimmy Butler in my lifetime. But here we are.
Yeah, maybe Popovich gave him a call and said, Thibs, I got an idea for you. You should try it out. You're listening to Tom Haberstroh. You can find his work on the NBC Sports My Teams app, on the Bulls page specifically. Steph Curry is the new Michael Jordan is the headline. It's a fantastic piece. Highly recommend you read it. Tom, thanks so much for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Anytime.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play. We've got a winnable game Saturday for the Bulls against the Cavs. We'll be talking to you guys real soon.